are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Friday, everybody. Hopefully you had a fantastic week and are looking ahead to a great weekend. It's the start of baseball, opening night last night with the Nationals and Yankees and Dodgers and Giants. The Minnesota Twins start tonight, if baseball is also your cup of tea, as it is mine. So looking forward to that. Today, here at Locked On Wolves, we're going to touch on a few Kevin Garnett and ownership notes off the top. The possibility of Garnett purchasing the team from Glenn Taylor, of course. We covered that news extensively on the Wednesday and Thursday shows. In fact, it's the only thing we talked about on Wednesday. So please check those episodes out if you did not. And then I'd also like to critique a couple of articles out there proposing trades for the Timberwolves. Basically just, hey, this would be a great offseason move for, you know, the 10 worst teams in the league or whatever. And basically just give my thoughts on what those, I guess, non-Wolves centric blogs and writers are saying about the Wolves and what my thoughts are on their thoughts, I guess. And then finally today, quickly at the end of the show, my nominees for All-NBA Awards, which is something we're doing across the Locked On NBA Network. It's a decidedly less Wolves centric conversation, but certainly topical at this time of year. First, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And if you do subscribe on iTunes, please help us out with a review on there. That definitely helps us get in front of more eyeballs and ears, I suppose. Also, we're on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, really anywhere that you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so a couple of quick thoughts on, I guess what's, you know, a little bit of a few recent, not developments, but notes in the last 24 hours or so about the ownership situation. There's an article written by Steve Ashburner at NBA.com. Of course, he was a longtime writer, I believe, at the Minneapolis Star Tribune in the Twin Cities, who covered the Timberwolves for many years. He's been at NBA.com and NBA TV for a while now. And basically, he wrote an article that's entitled Five Things for Kevin Garnett to Consider as He Tries to Purchase the Wolves. I don't even really agree with all of them. The first one is be careful what you wish for, basically just saying that the Timberwolves are a woebegone franchise, but Garnett knows that. And anybody that buys the team is going to know that. They're not going to buy the team without knowing about passing on Steph Curry and trading Ray Allen on draft night and making an under the table contract for Joe Smith and getting penalized for it and only getting his season out of Jimmy Butler. Like, whoever's going to buy the team knows those things. So that's irrelevant. If Taylor's selling, do you really want to be buying? Basically saying that Taylor's a good business person, and why would you want to buy a team that a smart business person is selling at, you know, on the heels or in the middle of a pandemic? Of course, again, whoever's buying the team is doing their research. They know that we're in the middle of a pandemic. They know that the Wolves are the third least valued franchise in terms, according to Forbes, in terms of their overall valuation. But also, NBA franchises are increasing exponentially in their value and much faster than any of the other pro sports. So obviously, the person who's going to buy the team has done the research. Talks about the process, same thing. The Timberwolves version of the process, of course, which is the reset that Gerson Rosas is doing. So again, Garnett knows that. So does everybody else. And also, the Wolves have two guys who were all-stars when they were 23. So I think they're fairly far along in this process. And then his fourth point is, basically, there aren't a lot of KGs, which this is a fair point that if Garnett's going to take over the team, it goes back to the concern of, does Garnett start to meddle into basketball operations decisions? He's not going to be a coach. He's not going to be on the sideline. He's not going to be a basketball ops executive, most likely, two steps away. He'll be like three steps away in a suit in a box, or I guess maybe sitting courtside Michael Jordan style as a, you know, three steps away from the players. Sure, he can get down on the court and, practice post moves with guys like Kevin McHale did, but he shouldn't be able to just meddle in the day-to-day operations. And he's going to be bothered if he sees that D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns don't have the exact same intensity day in and day out that Kevin Garnett did, but basically no one did. I mean, even Garnett was even a different mindset than even like a Kobe Bryant. I'm not suggesting he had more of a killer instinct than Kobe, but they were just different guys. And the way that Garnett approached game days was just so intense, even up until he retired when he was only playing 14 minutes a game or whatever his final couple seasons. But at any rate, that's a fair point. And then also his fifth point, a little bit tongue in cheek, I guess. Nobody's ever retired their own number, which is true. It would be great for the Wolves to retire his number before Garnett actually becomes the owner, or perhaps it's all done in one fell swoop. But that's an interesting read that I only, I guess, what, 40% agree with, kind of. So go ahead and read that on NBA.com. And then one other note was Doc Rivers, of course, Kevin Garnett's former coach in Boston, was asked in the NBA. Of course, the Clippers are in the NBA bubble in Orlando, was asked about Garnett's interest in buying the team. And he basically said he wishes him well. Of course, the NBA only has one African-American owner, I believe only one minority owner, and that being Michael Jordan owning the Charlotte Hornets. So Garnett would double the number of black owners in the NBA. Obviously Rivers, his quote was, "I'd love to see Garnett and more players get into ownership. It'd be awesome. You know, he wishes him the best," that sort of a thing. So there's a little bit of chatter out there across the NBA about this possibility of Garnett owning the Timberwolves. And it's exciting to think about, to be sure. I guess one other point on Garnett coming out on Twitter and also now on Instagram, where he posted something similar basically to what he said on Twitter about wanting to own the Timberwolves and his passion for the city of Minneapolis and how he's willing to work with Glenn Taylor. Garnett coming out as fast as he did within hours of the report was genius. It was a genius business play on his part. Think about it. Everybody knows that Glenn Taylor and Kevin Garnett have had a longstanding rift. They've actually had these two big blowups. The first time Garnett left the team and the second time he left the team. Everyone knows that they don't get along. Everybody loves Kevin Garnett. Timberwolves fans are generally predisposed, at least the younger generation of Timberwolves fans, to dislike Glenn Taylor and to love Kevin Garnett for obvious reasons. We talked about this earlier this week. So for Garnett to come out and say, "I'm ready," essentially to bury the hatchet, "I'm ready to do business with Glenn Taylor, a guy who I called a snake just a few months ago," that's showing that Garnett is ready to be mature and let bygones be bygones. And we don't know what Taylor's thoughts actually are yet. So if Taylor doesn't sell the team to Garnett, then Garnett can forever claim, "I was the bigger man and ready to put this aside," whether or not that's fair, whether or not, you know, Taylor sells to a different group because he can get a better deal or whatever that case might be. That makes Garnett look good. And if this helps Garnett get the team, that's the best case scenario. But the worst case for Garnett is now he can say, "I did what I could. I said I'm ready to set it aside. And Glenn, you know, shoved me to the side and sold to somebody else." So it's a genius business play by Garnett. There's no way he loses this in terms of a public perception, because that's his worst case scenario. His best case scenario is they do let bygones be bygones. Maybe they agree to retire the jersey ceremony before the ownership takes place or as part of it, or maybe Glenn is present for the jersey retirement, even if he's not the majority owner anymore. Maybe Glenn maintains a minority stake for a period of time or whatever that might be. But a really smart play by Garnett to do that so publicly and so swiftly, because now there's no way out of this for Glenn where Garnett doesn't look like, you know, Glenn can still look good if he comes out of this selling it to Garnett and, you know, keeping the team in Minnesota, but there's no possible way for Garnett to look bad in terms of this ownership transaction. And that incentivizes Glenn to make himself look good as well. So fantastic, genius, smart play by Kevin Garnett. And we'll of course see how this all plays out. All right. Next up, I want to talk about a couple of these potential trades, or at least, I guess, not rumored trades, but proposed trades by folks on the internet, and see what people are saying about what the Wolves need to do in terms of acquiring more talent this offseason. So we're going to talk about that next. All right, there's three of these articles that I want to look at. The first is on Bleacher Report. It's by Grant Hughes, entitled "The Biggest Decision Every NBA Team Will Have to Make This Offseason." This is actually not all that newsworthy. It's pretty obvious. The question he has for the Timberwolves is, what's Malik Beasley's worth? Basically says that the Wolves should be able to keep Beasley because there aren't that many teams that have much cap space, which is true. I think the one floated by John Hollinger the other day on the Hollinger and Duncan podcast here on the Locked On NBA Network was the Atlanta Hawks. Malik Beasley's from the Atlanta area, or at least from Georgia, I guess, and the Hawks should have some cap space. But basically, the question here is what's Beasley worth? We've talked about that pretty extensively, so we don't need to spend a lot of time on that, but clearly that's the one that folks around the league are looking at, what the Timberwolves are going to do with Malik. The other article I want to mention is by Zach Buckley, also at Bleacher Report. And this article is more of a pure speculation, you know, kind of throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks type of a piece, called "One Offseason Trade Every NBA Team Should Already Be Thinking About." And for the Timberwolves, his is, "Minnesota Timberwolves boost the offense with Buddy Hield." And he actually borrows from Dane Moore over at Zone Coverage, a local Wolves site with a blog and podcast network. in the Twin Cities and basically borrows a quote from Dane saying that the Wolves already have an elite pick and pop big in Towns. They have the ball handler with extended range in Russell. And if they can add a guy who can drain threes at the clip of Buddy Hield, that would make the Wolves offense impossibly potent, basically. And then it says, I mean, obviously this only works if the Sacramento Kings are willing to talk Hield trades, but after giving him a $94 million extension and then benching him in January, they might be more eager than you'd think. If Jarrett Culver and James Johnson are enough for the Kings to bite, this should be a no-brainer for the Wolves. Let me just say, that is the understatement of the century. If the Wolves could get Buddy Hield right now for Jarrett Culver and James Johnson, I have not run that through the trade machine. I think it would be close, because remember, Johnson has the expiring deal. It would put the Wolves, there'd be some complications in future years in terms of salary committed to three guys. But Buddy Hield at $94 million is probably a better fit than Devin Booker at whatever his max contract is annually. And it is true, the Kings benched Hield in January. Remember, he was coming off the bench when they had that massive like 25-point comeback in the final half of the fourth quarter against the Wolves back in, I think it was actually late January. And I think he was back in the starting lineup maybe towards the end, you know, right before the hiatus. But if the Wolves could get Hield for Culver and James Johnson and like a second round pick or something, I mean, I think they would have done that yesterday. I don't know why the Kings would do that unless there's some sort of internal issues they have with Hield and maybe that's why he's benched. I'm not sure. I'm not completely in tune with that. But I mean, yeah, I guess Culver still is upside and you roll the dice and I guess there's a slight chance he ends up better than Buddy Hield still. But it doesn't seem likely. And unless the Wolves were to attach at least a first round pick, why would you do that if you're the Kings? If there's any chance of them doing that, Buddy Hield is a fantastic fit for what the Wolves are trying to do. Another guard with range. He's a volume 3-point shooter who also can back it up with percentage. And adding him to D'Angelo Russell would make the Wolves backcourt just incredible. So that's really a no-brainer for me. No question about it. And I'm sure the Wolves have already explored that. But if not, I mean, I guess if Gerson Rosas wants to take the cue from Zach Buckley at Bleacher Report, that's a good direction to look in terms of trying to get Buddy Hield. The final article I want to look at is by far the most intriguing and would deserve a lengthy debate. Basically, this article is also at Bleacher Report by Grant Hughes, our friend from the Malik Beasley comment a little bit ago, talking about that as the biggest offseason question mark for the Wolves. This article is desperation trades to get NBA's worst 10 teams to the playoffs next season. And this is really intriguing, actually. His proposals that the Wolves would approach the Orlando Magic offer Jarrett Culver and Jacob Evans to get Al-Farouq Aminu. This is the fascinating, you know, how much upside are you willing to sacrifice for a guy who has been a really solid rotation, borderline starter level player for good playoff teams recently, but had a terrible season last year, mostly due to injury, but just a bad season. Would the Wolves be willing to give up the potential future of Jarrett Culver and any potential upside he has? Jacob Evans is, you know, he was a draft pick of the Warriors. I don't particularly care for him much as a prospect. He's got a lot of defensive upside, but the offensive limitations are real. So I'd be surprised if Jacob Evans turned into much. So he's more of a throw in to balance the salaries. But is this a trade that you would consider if you're Gerson Rosas? I mean, so Aminu has 2 years left on the 3-year deal he signed before last season. Next, in the 2021 season, he's getting paid $9.7 million, just under $10.2 million the following year. So 2 years and roughly $20 million left on his deal. And the Wolves, of course, Jarrett Culver still in his rookie scale deal. Jacob Evans is as well. And packaging those two guys to get Aminu, it would be an absolutely gutsy move. You'd be taking your guy who you traded up to get, whether or not they wanted Culver when they traded up from 11 to 6 last year, we don't know for sure. But either way, they traded up and drafted Jarrett Culver to give up on him in one season to get a guy who's about to turn 30 that has $20 million left on his deal. And quite frankly, was not good last season. He only appeared in 18 games for the Magic and didn't look good when he played. He had a torn meniscus that ended his season. So if you just assume that that's a lost year and he's still the 3-and-D player he was you know, his age in his prime from ages 25 to 28 with Portland, he was a legitimately good player. You look at his 4 years for the Portland Trailblazers, he averaged 9.5 points a game, 7 rebounds a game, played both forward spots, and shot the ball 35% from three across his career in Portland, including one season he was at 37% just 2 years ago when he was 27 years old in the 17-18 season. So you're looking at a guy who's at worst a league average 3-point shooter, still probably a plus defender, but on the back half of his prime and with $20 million due to him in the next 2 years coming off a knee injury. Personally, if this trade were on the table 2 years ago and the Wolves had, you know, call it, I mean, I don't know, I guess what the equivalent of Culver would have been, but if Aminu, let's just say if Aminu is 2 years younger, then this is a trade that I would 100% consider. If the Wolves really believe that they're a perimeter defender and a couple more shooters away from being a playoff team, at least, then this is a move that you make, and Aminu makes a difference. I mean, he's a good player. You look at his career and he's been a plus player for the majority of it, but this isn't a trade you make now. The Wolves are still in talent acquisition mode. Yes, they have two stars. They have a superstar in Towns. They have two all-stars who are young. They need to find a third star, but they can't spend $20 million on Aminu when Culver at this point still has upside remaining. They could probably get, you know, I'd rather try and move him in a deal for a Buddy Hield or a Devin Booker or Bradley Beal. Those are the types of deals that Culver is going to be involved in, or he's going to show something in year two. And then he becomes a guy that the Wolves are continuing to try and build around. I don't think this is the move that you make. Maybe in 1 year, when Aminu's on an expiring, or if they were a year further into Culver's development and they were pretty sure that they knew what he was going to be. But I don't think you sacrifice what's left, you know, knowing what we know about Culver's work ethic, his defensive abilities, his athleticism, his length, all those tools are reasons that he could become a player similar to the impact that Aminu has. Obviously a little bit of a different player and more of a, much more of a guard than Aminu. Aminu is a forward, but that sort of an impact where it's a 3-and-D impact with perhaps some playmaking skills that Aminu doesn't possess, then I think you got to hang on to Culver. So this would, I guess, by definition of the article, it would be a desperation trade and not one that I don't think Gerson Rosas would make that. The Magic could very easily spin this as, hey, we made a mistake last year, signed this guy to a 3-year deal, and now we're flipping him for the number 6 overall pick in last year's draft. And that would be an easy sell to their fan base. It's a little bit trickier for the Timberwolves if they were to pull that trigger. So I would not expect this to be a trade that the Timberwolves pursue. All right, I want to wrap up by talking all NBA, or I should say NBA award picks here in our final segment. All right, so today we're actually just going to run through the nominations. Next week, we'll talk through the actual ballot and then discuss the results after Locked On votes, the Locked On NBA Network votes early next week when all the hosts have cast their ballots. And I will also say who I voted for, as well as what the final tally looks like. Today, I'll talk through the nominees that have been put together by John Hollinger and others at the Locked On NBA Network. The MVP ballot is going to include, I'm just going to run through these names and give a couple of thoughts on the list of nominees. For MVP, it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Bucks, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis, both of the Lakers, James Harden on the Rockets, Kawhi Leonard of the Clippers, Luka Doncic on the Mavs. For me, the MVP list always should be the best player in the league. I think some of the other context matters. So does LeBron or AD get docked a little bit for both being on the same team? I don't want to say docked, but I think it factors into the equation. Yes, Giannis has Chris Middleton. He's got some other guys, but he doesn't have another guy who's in the conversation for MVP. Yes, James Harden has Russell Westbrook, and Westbrook ended up having a decent year, but Westbrook's not what he was when he won the MVP. Kawhi Leonard's got Paul George, and you know, Luka Doncic's team isn't quite at the same level of these other teams that we're talking about. So, you know, I think those things factor into it, which I guess tips my hand a little bit on my vote, but that's the list of nominees. I think it's a great list. I don't know that I would add anything to it. Those are the guys that I would certainly consider as the top 6 candidates for that award. Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert is always on this list. Also, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Brooke Lopez, of course, both of the Bucks, and then Anthony Davis of the Lakers. I mean, it's notable there's two guys on the MVP list in Davis and Antetokounmpo who are both on the Defensive Player of the Year list. I think that is intriguing. It also speaks to their candidacies for MVP, that they're that dominant on both ends of the floor to be in both conversations. Gobert is obviously a game changer for his team, makes a huge difference. Anthony Davis shores up a Lakers defense that outside of him and LeBron James isn't all that impressive. So I think I think these are also great candidates here. I think for me, the front runners have to be Gobert and Antetokounmpo. Those have to be the guys that you look at as front runners for this award. The Most Improved Player Award has one name that appears to be kind of been, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. The one guy who went from not close to being an all-star to an all-star, Brandon Ingram of the Pelicans. Also Luka Doncic, who had a significant leap from year one to year two in the league as a 20-year-old. Christian Wood of the Pistons came out of nowhere. Bam Adebayo of the Heat was good last year, improved this year, which I guess is the name of the award. And then Norman Powell on the Raptors, helping Toronto maintain their standing as one of the league's best teams after losing Kawhi Leonard in the offseason. That's a pretty good list there. I think there's a couple names that stand out above the rest. In my opinion, we'll get into that here next week. Sixth man of the year for me, this is a much shallower list. Dennis Schroeder of the Thunder, Christian Wood of the Pistons, Derrick Rose of the Pistons, and Mikal Bridges of the Suns. The only playoff team on that list is the Thunder, and Detroit and Phoenix aren't particularly good. So it's hard for me to get too excited about these six man candidates for teams that aren't playoff teams. That said, Dennis Schroeder, I've never been the biggest Dennis Schroeder fan. I don't think he impacts winning significantly. I think he's too inefficient. He's almost like a better version of, for me, and this is a dig for sure, a better version of like a Dion Waiters in some ways, just kind of a little bit shot happy and doesn't impact winning, I don't think, too much. However, he's done a good job playing alongside Chris Paul, and the Thunder have surprised people with how good they've been this year. So Schroeder's definitely in the conversation, and really by virtue of being the only one on a winning team on this list of nominees, he's got a good shot. The Rookie of the Year list of nominees, obviously Ja Morant of the Grizzlies, obviously Zion Williamson of the Pelicans. The other guys that are on our ballot are Kendrick Nunn of the Heat, Brandon Clark also of the Grizzlies. So a couple of Grizzlies. All of these teams are at least part of the restart, part of the conversation for the playoffs. And again, there's a couple names that stand out above the other two as legit candidates to win this award. And I think a lot of conversation is going to be around 19 games that Zion Williamson played, 59 games that Ja Morant has played. At the moment, it looks like Ja Morant's playing in the restart. I don't believe Zion Williamson's rejoined the bubble after leaving for a family emergency. So, there's that to consider as well, fair or unfair. Again, it's nobody's fault that Zion's only played 19 games. Other than just injuries. But I think that you have to consider that when you're taking the full body of work for each of these guys. So those are our nominees. Again, we're going to vote here over the next few days, over the weekend and into the early part of next week. And then I'll discuss the results here on Locked On Wolves, as well as give some context for what my selections were on the ballot here next week. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Of course, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back on Monday again. We're doing 5 shows a week every single day. We'll be back to talk Timberwolves basketball and any news that breaks, especially related to this ownership business over the weekend. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.